In many cases, perhaps in most, whistleblowing is clear-cut. The issues are simple, the response is simple, and the observer who is not steeped in the issue can still understand what the story is. But some cases of whistleblowing are complicated. The right and wrong of it may not be hard to understand, but the background, the regulations, and the governmental response often is. It's a special kind of whistleblower who keeps fighting in these complicated circumstances. It's a special kind of whistleblower who continues to fight for 30 years. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Joe Carson was born in Brooklyn, New York, and earned a degree in mechanical engineering from the University of Rochester. He was then hand-picked by Admiral Hyman Rickover, the father of the nuclear navy, to spend 6 years on a nuclear submarine. In 1982, Carson moved into the private sector, working as an engineer at several nuclear energy facilities. In 1990, he joined the Department of Energy as an engineer. Just 1 year later, in 1991, Carson blew the whistle on wrongdoing for the first time. He reported DOE was using paid consultants to supplement employees. He argued that this was designed to milk the system. DOE immediately retaliated by declining to implement his safety findings, which detailed serious workplace issues in DOE's Oak Ridge, Tennessee nuclear facilities, putting lives at danger. It took 10 years, but the Merit Systems Protection Board found in Carson's favor, ruling that the Department of Energy, quote, retaliated against the appellant because of his whistleblowing by taking away critical duties from his job assignments, issuing letters of admonishment, and by reassigning him from his home in Tennessee to Maryland. This retaliation, not surprisingly, resulted in illness and stress, as well as necessitated the appellant to take a large amount of time from work to consult with his attorneys and other advisors, end quote. DOE was ordered to pay Carson $400,000 for legal fees and costs, but the story doesn't end there. Frankly, Carson's complaints about DOE were just beginning. The MSPB is an independent, quasi-judicial agency in the executive branch of the U.S. government that serves as the guardian of federal merit systems. Its mission is to protect the merit systems principles and promote an effective federal workforce free of prohibited personnel practices. In other words, it is precisely the place where a federal whistleblower should go to report evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety. But it doesn't necessarily work that way. Carson told an interviewer this. He said, "My 30-plus year whistleblowing story has essentially two parts. The first part was against DOE. The second part is against the Office of Special Counsel and MSPB." Joe Carson, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, John. It's wonderful to be here with you and your audience.
I wanted to begin, Joe, with the nature of your whistleblowing. Whistleblowing is, of course, as I said a minute ago, bringing to light evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety. So tell us about how this all started. We're talking about 32 years ago now. What was the nature of your whistleblowing?
Well, you have to laugh or cry, but they hired me into the Department of Energy because I had a lot of deck plate experience as a nuclear engineer. I had started up several nuclear reactors in the Navy and in the commercial world. And the Department of Energy realized they didn't have technically competent people to do oversight of the contractors who actually operate the Department of Energy's facilities. And the Department of Energy is unique in singular in a number of ways amongst all 300 plus federal agencies. And that stems from its mission for nuclear weapons. It's called the Department of Energy, but reality is energy, yes, but energy and nuclear weapons is a big part of what DOE has been about. You know, it's a successor to the Manhattan Project, to the AEC, okay? Right. One of the things that's singular about DOE is that it's self-regulating for its worker safety. When Congress passed the Workplace Health and Safety Law in, 1970, it allowed agencies to exempt themselves from OSHA's jurisdiction. The Department of Energy was the only agency to do so. So I was hired, in a sense, to be in effect, a combination OSHA NRC inspector within DOE with oversight over DOE's facilities in Oak Ridge and elsewhere. And what I found is that because of secrecy, because of fear of retribution, because DOE lawyers would put a target on anyone's back who voiced any concerns and get away with it, that DOE was very unsafe facilities. And I'm just not, this is not just my conjecture. My whistleblowing in the first 10 years of this saga played a positive role in the passage of a law 2000. The law is entitled the Energy Employee Occupational Illness Compensation Program Act of 2000. Getting that passed was a very close thing. I think my whistleblowing and other actions played a positive, perhaps significant role in its passage. At this point in time, late 2023, over 135,000 former DOE workers or their surviving spouses have received over $20 billion in compensation.
Oh my God.
For being unsafe and unhealthy workplace conditions without their knowledge, without adequate protection in DOE facilities during the Cold War.
And now, let me interrupt you. That's how you started. It was about safety. It was about safety at the workplace. And when you went, I'm even reluctant to say when you went public, but when you reported this, you were met almost immediately with retaliation. What was it that DOE did to punish you for this whistleblowing? And I'm going to add, too, I've known you for a long time. You've always done this exactly the way we are trained to do it. You've always done it within the confines of the law.
Mm-hmm. Right. I've been nonviolently resisting institutional evil now for 30 years.
Yes.
And I think this are enormous. So
what did they do?
Right,
to you?
You're correct. Initially, they suppressed my safety findings because I voiced concerns about the use of consultants, support service contractors. DOE had contractors and contractors, and I'm unusual. I mentioned DOE is, I think, singular. I mean, the nuclear weapons mission singular in being exempt from OSHA and NRC jurisdiction. It's also singular in its reliance upon contractors. The term is called GOCO. GOCO, the acronym I'm going to use, I'm sorry, probably a lot of acronyms. GOCO stands for government-owned contractor operated. So DOE owns these facilities, but it has contractors. It has long-term contracts with big corporations to operate the facilities, thinking that's more what the private sector should be doing as opposed to the federal government. But DOE then does contract management. But when DOE realized that these contractors had been making a ton of money, but dumping a lot of waste, believe it or not, and I'm going off on a lot of tangents. If you look at the debit list of the U.S. government, you know what number three list, the third item on that list is?
I hate to ask.
Environmental costs for the Department of Energy, number three. Now estimated at $500 billion. And every year we spend $10 billion to clean it up, but the estimated cost of remaining cleanup goes up. You know, and this is from another legacy of creating 60,000 nuclear weapons, you know, during the Cold War or more.
Yeah.
So I was, because I voiced concerns about the support service contractors, they started to suppress my safety findings and then put me on what's called a PIP, a performance improvement plan. It was pretty amazing because 1 month I'm getting a 4-row. Performance evaluation, then I get a special performance evaluation of 0.57. And it's like college with a 4.0 scale. And my response is, I'm breathing. Isn't it worth at least a 0.5? You know?
Right. And over the years, Joe, you've had a number of wins, including one early on in which the government was ordered to pay you $400,000 for your legal fees. Why does your case remain in contention?
Well, okay, it's actually in the first 10 years I've prevailed no fewer than 8 times. And when I say prevailed, I'm using that the more legal term of art. That the government had to pay my attorney's fees. You had to prevail to get attorney's fees, okay? So one time I prevailed by dint of a settlement. The other time I prevailed by dint of unilaterally withdrew the contested personal action. And the third time, the time you described in the intro, was yes, I won on the merits. Mm-hmm. And additionally, I mentioned the settlement agreement. DOE did not honor the settlement agreement, so I went back to MSPB. to get MSPB to enforce the settlement agreement. And MSPB agreed DOE had not honored the settlement agreement. And in the case you mentioned, DOE did not honor the order to restore me. So I had to go back to MSPB to get MSPB to again order DOE or threaten DOE to withhold the salaries of a DOE official if they didn't comply with the order. Okay, so that was the... And during this whole time, there's another entity, and that's the U.S. Office of Special Counsel. And that's a small, obscure agency which is specifically tasked to protect me from what repeatedly happened to me. All right, so I'm going to make a distinction here. DOE singled me out. Early on in this, I was explained to me very clearly the lawyer's rules or laws, if you will, for employment in DOE. And it was kind of like a good fellow's kind of a thing. Joe, you're a great guy. Look at your background. You got a nice family, blah, blah, blah. Hey, don't fuck with us, got it? Hey, Joe, you're going to do just fine. But let me tell you the rules here, okay? If it's legal, it's ethical. In DOE, if the attorneys get away with it, it's legal. And in DOE, the only right you have, Joe, is the right to seek employment elsewhere. Hey, Joe, you're going to do just fine, okay?
Right.
Okay.
And then here we are.
I had to ask myself the question, John.
Yes.
Is this why I was willing to kill 20 million people on a nuclear submarine? And the answer is no.
No, not at all.
No. And I'm having a nice life, but they're going to have to take me out. You know, I mean, not bullets to the back of the head, but no, I'm going to have to be fired. Yes. We're going to make this ugly.
Yes. Okay? And then 30 years later, and you're still in the same position that you were 30 years ago. This is 30 years after you began your whistleblowing. So I've known you for about half that period. How have the issues changed during that time? And how has the government's response to your whistleblowing changed? Have you ever gotten to the point where they've said, okay, listen, this has gone on long enough. You're right. We're wrong. We're going to fix this. Or have they just doubled down and fought you this whole time?
Okay, well, let me try to, you mentioned I was born in Brooklyn. I'm showing here, I don't know if you can just get it on the screen, if I can find it. Anyways, my grandfather's ring, he was a New York City fireman. I put it in front of my nose, there it is, okay? And I'm named for him, a fireman, you know, 100 years ago. But I grew up watching the erection of the World Trade Center walking to high school. I was in it numerous times, you know, when it was there. Mm-hmm. So my strongest, and I'm saying, you know, I'm not a BS artist. My strongest initial and lasting reaction to 9/11, relief. It wasn't nuclear.
Right.
Knowing firsthand about the corruption in the Department of Energy, the custodian of America's nuclear stockpile, and the lead federal agency for securing nuclear weapons materials around the world. Okay?
Good point.
So as personal, and I realized I was going down this path a minute ago, DOE singled me out for reprisal. The Office of Special Counsel, in failing to protect me time after time after time, did not single me out. I was just another face in the crowd. And I realized that the reprisal I was experiencing in DOE, the law-breaking I was experiencing in DOE, had causes outside of DOE. The failure of OSC to protect me enabled the DOE attorneys to basically collude with the personnel specialists and line management to engage in reprisal. Oh, and then we seek discovery, they would invoke attorney-client privilege. You know, can you do that at a drug cartel? Can lawyers representing a drug cartel say, shoot the witness and then invoke attorney-client privilege?
Right.
They can in DOE, the custodian of America's nuclear stockpile.
Crazy.
Okay? So why am I still here talking to you? DOE attorneys know I got dirt on them. So we have kind of a standoff, but I realize DOE attorneys can do what they do because OSC attorneys allow them to. And MSPB leaders allow them to. So to fight DOE further was kind of futile. And I saw, you know, I'm not overstating my reaction to 9/11. And my reaction is I have to take down OSC, this law-breaking fraud of a federal agency that puts American civilization at a necessary increased risk of a nuclear 9/11 or other existential catastrophe.
Joe, hold that thought. We are speaking with Joe Carson, an American whistleblower from the U.S. Department of Energy, who has been blowing the whistle on government wrongdoing for more than 30 years. Stay right there, Joe. When we come back, we'll discuss Joe Carson's experience working with and fighting against the federal bureaucracy set up to address whistleblower revelations. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Joe Carson, the American whistleblower from the U.S. Department of Energy. Joe, good to have you with us.
Thank you again. It's good to be back.
Thank you, Joe. And Joe, to me, the most complicated aspect of your whistleblowing has been this ongoing interaction with the Merit Systems Protection Board, the MSPB. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to us exactly what the MSPB is, what its role is in whistleblowing, and why you've had to fight it for so many years?
Let's go back in a little bit of history of the Federal Civil Service, and I'll try to get just the high points. Mm-hmm. It was created in 1883 following the assassination of President Garfield by a disappointed office seeker. Prior to that, all federal agency employment was patronage-based, but there was so much corruption on the grants, and the federal agencies, the federal government had grown so much in the Civil War that there was a push to make federal employment merit-based, not patronage-based. The Pendleton Act of 1883 created what is, you know, now the Federal Civil Service. The biggest single legislative change in that 140 years,
right,
is the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978. And the MSPB was created by that law. Another agency created by that law was the Office of Special Counsel, mm-hmm. and several others. One of the legislative objectives of the Civil Service Reform Act was to codify in law that federal agency employment would be merit-based, not, if you will, corruption-based, or, you know, if you're not following merit at this point in time, you're breaking the law, so I'm going to say that's corruption. The Merit Protection Board, as the name it would imply, was to protect merit-based employment practices in federal agencies. Violations of merit-based, of the merit principles by the agencies, a term prohibited personal practices, which include whistleblower reprisal. Excuse me. The Office of Special Counsel has the positive duty to protect federal employees from prohibited personal practices. The Merit Systems Protection Board, in addition to its quasi-adjudicative function, has the duty to report to the President and Congress mm-hmm. whether federal employees are adequately protected from prohibited personal practices, including but not limited to whistleblower reprisal. And then the President has the duty, if MSPB sounds the alarm, to take any action necessary to correct it.
Right.
It's all in the law.
Right. Right.
So OSC is a fraud. It's a, and what I'm saying is a fraud. In my talk, the whistleblower advocates, and they would say, well, OSC is good, it's well-meaning. And how can you reconcile well-meaning with fraud?
Right.
Well, you can, in the sense that OSC has got 120 employees. The police are a federal workforce of 2 million. It just doesn't have the resources.
That's right.
So it cuts all kinds of corners. So it may be well-meaning, but it's still a fraud.
Sure.
It just can't. Not viable.
Yeah. And you see the same thing on Capitol Hill, where you have these enormous federal departments, and then you have a dozen staff members or two dozen staff members that are supposed to oversee them. It's just not tenable. And in your case,
right.
This is dragged on for so long that you must have attracted the attention of at least somebody in Congress, right? There are committees in both the House and the Senate that oversee the activities of the Department of Energy.
Yeah.
Surely somebody has said something. So what's been the reaction in Congress to your whistleblowing?
Well, the reaction of the staffers, and you know probably as well as I, mm-hmm. they have a short half-life.
Oh, yes.
And OSPB are a tiny and obscure, but they don't tend to get a lot of attention on the staffers. As many other things, Congress has, if you will, outsourced its oversight to whistleblower advocacy groups
mm-hmm.
and others, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk to people in Congress, I'll say, what do the whistleblower advocacy groups say? They really don't want it. They don't say I'm wrong, but they don't get involved.
Yes.
And that's kind of the discussion.
Yeah, that's actually been my understanding of your situation. You and I have a lot of the same friends in Washington, for example. We're acquainted with the same whistleblower advocacy groups. We've worked with,
yes.
with several of the same groups. But mm-hmm. but when you mention the MSPB, their eyes just sort of glaze over. And I've often wondered, where are these outside groups in all this? Why are they not advocating for you? And beyond the whistleblower groups, what about the federal employees unions? Why aren't they helping you? Why haven't they jumped to your defense?
Okay, well, option A. I'm just an engineer crying wolf. There's nothing to see, right?
Right.
So they're not going to get engaged, right? That's an option. All right. Option B. These advocacy groups and others are great watchdogs until the government lawbreaking benefits their business models, then not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very pretty picture, but is there an option C?
Right. Right. There really isn't an option C besides suing. All you can do is to continue filing lawsuits. Is that right?
Well, whistleblower reprisal appeals, but that goes in front of MSPB. It's like a real,
I've
been in the Supreme Court four times. And so you can imagine there's reams of documentation.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that sheet of paper anywhere that says my whistleblower disclosures lack reasonable belief.
Yeah.
It's all about the attorneys trying to hide the ball.
Right.
Get my case dismissed on various grounds, so there's no determination of the merits, including the merits of my whistleblower disclosures. So, and then you get involved with the, you mentioned federal employee unions, and there's a, they have a vested interest in a worthless OSC and an MSPB that enables it. Why so? Because federal employee unions, and I'm a member of a bargaining unit. I used to belong to a union. In fact, I ran for the president of it or the steward of it years ago. They're open shop.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot require federal employees to pay dues to them. So why would a federal employee pay $300 to $400 a year in dues to a union?
Right.
And behind closed doors, the union reps will say, it's insurance. What do they mean by it's insurance? There's something called election of remedies if you allege a prohibited personal practice.
Yes.
You can either file a grievance within the union or you can go to OSC MSPB. You can't do both. So if OSC and MSPB is seen as worthless, then the grievance process through the unions is relatively better, which helps justify paying the insurance money for the dues.
Right.
So federal employee unions benefit from a broken OSC. No matter what harm to America, it helps sell union memberships, and that's what they're interested in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, John, let me be, I'm going to be 70 in a few months. I have almost 40 years of federal service. I want to get to, my personal post 9/11 mission accomplished and put it behind me. Okay.
Yes.
So early this year, my wife agreed I could spend up to $100,000 to get a resolution on my whistleblower disclosure.
Jeez.
I've now spent about $25,000. But I'm willing to put money on the table to say, anybody, file a complaint against me with the Tennessee Engineering Board,
mm-hmm.
that allegations of the law breaking in OSC and MSPB are not truthful and objective, that I'm an engineer crying wolf. And if the engineering board in Tennessee takes any disciplinary action against me, I'll give you whatever money we've agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be like
mm-hmm.
a bounty.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this to Kathy Harris and Henry Kerner, the respective heads or current head of MSPB and the former head of the Office of Special Counsel is now a nominee to become a member of MSPB.
Jeez.
No response.
No response.
But there's another angle to this also. Kathy Harris and the board members of MSPB are attorneys. The large majority of employees of OSC are attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
By current legal ethics, who is your client in the attorney-client relationship is kind of central to attorney's identity. And by current legal ethics, if you're a government agency attorney, your employing agency is your client.
Right.
So Kathy Harris, I had this discussion with her licensing authority, the D.C. Bar. She is justified to do whatever she can get away with to prevent any resolution of my whistleblower disclosure.
Right.
In the protecting her client, the agency that she also leads, the agency that's supposed to protect the integrity of the federal civil service. Can you see how we're kind of a house standing against itself?
Oh, yeah. There's an inherent conflict of interest here that you just can't get past.
Right. And then the legal profession, legal ethics, just don't address the scenario of a lawyer who works for a government agency who actually implements
right.
the laws.
Right.
They don't address it.
Right.
So they default to this That's my client. My client is never wrong. I'm a hired gun. I'll do whatever I can to protect my client.
Let's go.
Yeah. So here we are, 30 years later, and in my perception, a much diminished and more threatened country and world, in which trust in federal entities, other institutions, continues to decline. And I'm a poster child as to why it should decline.
Well, Joe Carson, thank you so much for being with us today. I want to thank you, and I want to thank our viewers, too. Patience and persistence are the keys to everything, even if it sometimes feels like they constitute instead the hard work that you have to do after getting tired of the hard work you've already done. Still, it's all worth it, even if you have to fight for 30 years like Joe Carson did. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.